Today, Wanted, First-Time Buyers, Your Country Needs You. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, with my latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian and New Zealand flavour. Today, I'm joined again by Joe Wilkes. Hi, Joe.
Good afternoon, Martin.
How are you going?
Yeah, very good, very good. We're muddling on through here, trying to deal with what's going on and trying to make some sense of it all. I've got my head stuck in a few numbers the last few days, and I just sort of try and analyse what the bloody hell's going on, because it wasn't making any sense. But I think I'm slowly getting there.
Okay, well, that's good. I think numbers are good because people like data, and you know, some people have said, well, you know, it's all very well driving around these estates, but tell us about the numbers. So we're going to tell you about the numbers today.
Yeah, we will, and I'm armed with a very strong coffee to get through this.
Jolly good.
Well, basically, I went away for a couple of weeks. We've not spoken, and we're starting to get some really, really quite interesting data coming out of the New Zealand housing market. Transactional volumes are falling off a cliff. We've talked about this before, and year on year, the last 2 years, the volume of transactions has come off the 2016 peak. Auckland in April suffered its lowest sales volume since the GFC, since 2008. There were 1,608 sales in Auckland over the course of the month, and just 5,800 nationally. So around the country, just 5,800 transactions took place. And, well, I wanted to look at that because there's a big drop off on year on year from April 2018 to 19. Auckland's drop was 16.9%. Nationally, it was a 9.9% drop. And I thought, well, this has got to have some impact on the level of new lending that's being reported by the banks to Reserve Bank of New Zealand's. They basically amalgamate all the loans that are made every month. And then we get the reporting on new lending in the New Zealand economy. And, well, New Zealand needs new lending to keep it going, a bit like Australia, because without it, things slow down. If, for any reason, the demand for new loans recedes, and that should happen, you would have thought, with such a drop-off in transactions, then that has knock-on effects to the other areas of the economy that we've talked about in our other posts.
And Joe, I think it's worth noting before we get started that the May Financial Stability Report from the Reserve Bank of New Zealand really has some very interesting things to say about the risks in the economy and how lending is going. So they say that domestically debt levels are high in the household sector and also in the dairy sector, and that the ratio of debt to disposable income is sitting well above 3 times for mortgaged households. And they also make the point that looking at the risk characteristics of new mortgages, high loan-to-value loans are up more than 20% in 2019, compared with around 15 or 16% the last 2 years. Whilst the proportion of loans with a debt-to-income ratio of greater than 5 has dropped a little, but is about 38% of new lending. So that highlights again some of the risks in the system. And they go on to say that at national level, the growth of household debt and house prices has slowed, but household debt has still grown faster than income in the past year. And housing market pressures could re-emerge if there is a strong response to the recent decline in mortgage rates or reduced uncertainty about the future tax treatment of property investments. And they also talk about house price dynamics. They say that some regions have recently had high home price growth. And this is not an immediate financial stability concern, as those regions are smaller and less stretched housing markets than Auckland. But Joe, this is a really interesting map because it highlights again how the pressure on home prices is centred in and around Auckland, where, of course, as we've discussed before, house prices relative to income have been out of kilter for some time. So I think the takeaway is you have to get more granular to really understand what's going on. So your analysis that we're going to discuss now will be really important. Hi, excuse the interruption, but if you are getting value from this post, please consider subscribing to DFA if you haven't already done so, or ring that bell for custom alerts. Plus, please consider supporting our efforts. You can make a one-off donation via PayPal, here's the link, or subscribe via Patreon for as little as $3 US a month or more to get access to exclusive additional content. The links are in the comments below. And thanks for supporting what we do. It's really appreciated and makes it possible for us to continue to make more great content.
So I had a little look at the lending data and April's lending data. But if you go through the RBNZ, it's called C31 data, they started recording in the second half of 2014 the aggregate amount of loans, and they break it down into first-time buyer loans, mover loans, which is people who are already existing homeowners moving, trading up and taking on more borrowing, and investor loans. Now, I have graphed these for you, and I hope you'll be able to show this. So 2014 is largely irrelevant because it's only a five-month data set. But you can see total lending in the New Zealand economy for households in 2015 was $66.79 billion. In 2016, we peaked at $72.256 billion, so quite a significant rise. And that big change in that credit growth is what was leading the peak. That, and I don't think we really know how much foreign money was hitting the market at that point in time as well. 2017, interestingly, was the first year that Auckland prices fell. And in that year, the aggregate lending dropped from the $72.256 billion to $59.53 billion. So you can see quite a big change in the national picture of overall loans. And that's the time that everybody started talking about, you've got to buy in Gore, you've got to buy in Christchurch, you've got to buy in Wellington. And then we had this big spiking of the regions who continued their price growth. And bizarrely, in 2018, lending growth grew to $64.31 billion. So again, increase in the total amount of new loans. But some things don't make sense when you look at the when you actually look at the data. And I wanted to look at April and say, well, okay, with 9.9% fewer transactions around the country, there were 5,800 sales. That's probably going to have an impact on lending. Now, the REINZ figures, they include, so they don't include new properties, but they will include people who are purchasing without a mortgage. So I sort of think that the two probably cancel each other off and we can just work with the REINZ numbers. So in April 2018, there was $5.375 billion of new lending. And in April 2019, we've seen $5.452 billion. So there has been a tiny little increase on a dramatic decrease in the overall amount of transactions. So then I looked at, okay, well, who's buying them? Who's going in and who's looking at these houses? And well, when you actually break it down, and you can, you know, the RBN said they do report on, amount of lending that's beyond 80% loan to value, and then the amount of lending that's below 80% loan to value. And if you look at the charts for both, you can see that the slightly lower loan to value ratios, there's been a drop off over the last couple of years of the investors entering the market, and there's been a dramatic uptick in the amount of first time buyers who are borrowing bigger amounts to go and buy these properties. The other thing I think is, which was quite interesting, is that when you go to the higher loan to value ratios, that's where the first time buyers have become very, very dominant, and there's been a dramatic increase, which has more than rivaled the decrease in the investor buying. So investor loans peaked at about 33% of the market back at the height of the boom. It's now about 18%, and the first time buyers portion is about 17% of total new lending. It should be worrying enough that we've got last year $64.31 billion worth of new lending in an economy that's only $300 billion. So, over the last 5 years, we've pretty much churned the whole GDP in new lending. So I think, you know, last year's numbers would be about 21, 22% of GDP in new loans. So I don't know what your thoughts are to that.
Well, I think it's quite interesting and consistent with what we're seeing here, right? Because effectively the lending to households is such a big proportion of the total economic activity. And of course, if it goes off the boil, then overall household disposable income is, you know, under strain. They don't spend as much, and that then kills the overall GDP. So effectively, it's all down to, can we stoke the household sector some more? And of course, if you think about it, if investors aren't actually really active because home prices are perhaps beginning to slide in some places, then it's got to be those who are able to buy. And of course, it's the first-time buyers who are effectively the target. I mean, here, as you may know, a couple of weeks ago, just before the election was won by the coalition, they announced this wacky, you know, 5% we'll cover the rest sort of proposition. So in other words, you only need a 5% deposit if you're a first-time buyer to get into the market, right?
Yeah.
Despite the fact that prices are falling. And now we've got looser lending coming through because APRA has basically dialed back for some of their lending standards as well. So you can see this playing out here, and I think in New Zealand too, that effectively it's the first-time buyer who is now in the cross sights of the, you know, the policymakers, because they are the only ones likely to be able to actually make a difference. And of course, the question is, should they really be enticing first-time buyers into a market which is clearly destabilising, on the prospect of, well, we'll help you get in, and you know, rates are really low, so yeah, therefore it's affordable, when in fact it really looks quite concerning. So that will be my take on what I'm seeing.
Well, I want to talk about a couple of things that are scaring the shit out of me, if I'm honest. First of all, we are encouraging our first-time buyers and any buyer really to borrow their funds from their KiwiSaver accounts.
Yep.
So the average KiwiSaver in New Zealand is currently 19,000 New Zealand dollars.
Right.
Putting that into perspective, that's 2.2% of a deposit for a median house price in Auckland.
Right, and let's just wind back. So the KiwiSaver is a particular scheme that's effectively government-backed where people can save money towards a deposit, right?
Exactly. It's very similar to your superannuation. We've had it going for 12 years over here.
Yep.
The average balance is just $19,000.
Yep.
And this is, you know, people are being encouraged to strip it. It's not going to go very far, though, if the average balance is 19,000.
Sure.
The other thing that I think people are forgetting is that we've still got 750,000 New Zealanders with student loans. So of a population of 5 million, I'm presuming that those who are in their 60s and 70s don't have student loans still. I don't know anymore. They could well do. But one of the things that scared me when I was looking at this for the first time buyers, because they are being persuaded into this market. And I looked at the numbers for April's first time buyer purchases. Now, 17% of what was borrowed as a total amount, just over 950 million New Zealand dollars, was borrowed by this set. So they've gone out there and they've taken on these loans. Now, there's some mismatches in the numbers. We had, and the RBNZ reported, that there were 22,000 new loans written in the month of April.
Mm.
There were only 5,800 transactions.
Mm.
So some of those new loans will have been written against existing properties, and they might be refinancing, they might be churn.
Yep.
But when you actually break it down in terms of the first-time buyers, you've got 2,200, so 10% of the total amount loan numbers, so 2,300 loans were taken by first home buyers. Averaging out their what they borrowed against the number of loans, that's 419,000 as an average first home buyer loan.
Mm.
Then you think a little bit further, and I'm not sure if the RBNZ are doing this, but if you have 2,200 loans taken out by first home buyers, they must be for purchases. The first-time buyers, it is impossible for them to have purchased, if you think about it, the 2,200 loans of 5,800 EINZ transactions is 39.6% of all the transactions,
mm-hmm.
17% of the debt to do so. There's no way that those numbers stack up.
No.
So what is happening is that the RBNZ are not reporting total mortgages. They're not separating the loans, because there's no way that 2,200 first-time buyers bought in New Zealand last month.
Sure.
How big is the real mortgage problem? I don't know, but these first-time buyers, if the average was 419,000, assuming 2,200 loans, the real issue is that they are borrowing even more than that, because the loans don't match up with the quantity of transactions that have been able to make.
Mm. And it's interesting because, of course, the question then is, well, how is a loan flagged as a first-time buyer loan, right? And certainly over here in Australia, we discovered a few years ago that the way the statistics were actually being collated, the flag that was being used was an incorrect flag, because basically it was loans that got a specific type of support, like an incentive scheme, was classed as a first-time buyer, but not everybody is using the incentive scheme. So basically they were understating the whole situation, and there were lots of other people who were effectively using some of those incentive schemes who weren't really first-time buyers. So then it was a real mess, and they've been still trying to tidy up the statistics. So even here, we're not clear that the numbers are correct. And by the way, also, they don't include first-time buyer investors in any of the numbers here either, right? And I don't know whether it's the same over there, but over here, certainly up until about 18 months ago, a lot of first-time buyers were going direct to the investment sector because they couldn't afford to buy locally where they wanted to live. So that was another factor that was actually messing up the numbers. So, yeah, basically the publicly available statistics, courtesy of the Reserve Bank and the statistics bodies here in Australia, were actually just off-key completely. So maybe you've got data issues over there too.
Yeah, I'm sure we have. And I know that one of the banks actually changed the way that they reported investor loans, or first-time investor loans, were being amalgamated into the first-time buyer numbers. Yeah. Now, if that's ANZ, who've got 33% of the mortgages there or thereabouts within the country, that skews the first-time buyers. So these stories, all of a sudden, first-time buyers are back in the market, whoopity-doo, could be complete fabrication. But what is obvious is that the first-time buyer loans are not going to be correlated to the true mortgage exposure that they're taking on. I spoke to a broker this morning, so I just wanted to get his eye on it, and said to him, well, you know, what percentage of loans that you write for anybody, do they take out one loan? He goes, nobody takes out one loan. Everybody is taking more than one loan against a purchase, because they split their exposure on a one-year fixed rate, three-year fixed rate. Some people actually have three loans against the same house. And he said, you know, I have got clients who've got five loans against the same property. So the loan-to-value reporting is complete bollocks. We've had LVR restrictions in place. You loan is 400 grand on a million-dollar purchase. Your second loan is another 400 grand on a million-dollar purchase. I don't know. I don't know how the regulators have been able to fudge this.
Okay. So what I was going to say was, what's interesting about that is that there is a fundamental disconnect here in Australia about household debt versus individual loan to value ratio, right? Yeah. And the way that the data is reported here, it's basically on an individual loan basis. But again, it doesn't take account of the total household exposure, right? Now, when I do my household surveys, I look at it from a household exposure perspective, and they quite often have loans from multiple lenders. And when you add them all up, the loan-to-value ratio and the loan-to-income ratio is a whole lot higher than the individual loan reported would be. Yeah. And until very recently, there's been no positive credit here in Australia. In other words, if people don't declare other loans that they may have, it isn't necessarily obvious. Now, if they do a search on the property, they should see it. But, you know, it's just two different lenses, right? So one lens is basically a loan view, and the other one is a household exposure view. And I think that quite often the data is being reported on a loan view rather than a household exposure view, and that's the real problem I think we've got.
Yeah, I think we're suffering that as well. I think that we have a little bit of protection because of the priority lending that we have over here, where the banks take a priority amount when they write the initial loan, which is often well in excess of the value of the purchase, so that people can, I actually think it's so that people are pretty much hamstrung and have to go back to that bank when they want to tap them up for a boat and a car. But that does offer some protection. And you can see that when you do the LINZ searches on properties.
Yep.
But it doesn't tell you how many loans are up against the individual residences. And that is where I think, you know, you can't have 22,000 loans written 2,200 to first-time buyers, and think that the first-time buyers were making up nearly 40% of the purchases last month. It just doesn't stack up.
Doesn't work, does it? No,
doesn't
indeed.
Work. Yeah. But nobody's questioning it. I mean, even the people who are reporting on it in the press aren't questioning it. Yeah. So I thought we should.
No, I think it's good. And you know, again, you know, I keep coming back to this point. It's damn lies and statistics, right? So basically, you know, there's a lot of numbers being thrown around by a lot of people, and quite often they're being thrown around with deliberate intent to try and position a particular outcome that they want to achieve. But nobody stands back and thinks about, hang on a moment, you know, is that objective? Is it actually accurate? And is it meaningful? And, you know, whether you look at CPI or unemployment rate, or whether you look at the number of loans out there, you know, frankly, we're just, you know, it's a load of jelly. It just wobbles all over the place and nobody can really get to see what's really going on. And I have a theory that that's actually deliberate rather than just happenstance, right? Because effectively, if you can, you know, you can argue your particular case and, you know, nobody can actually counter argue it, then effectively you can just carry on and do what you want to do. So I think it's probably a little bit more than just accident.
Yeah, I think there's no torches being shone. We're living in the darkness still. But you know, it's got to change. People have got to start questioning whether if that's you know, the average loan for a first home buyer in New Zealand of 419,000 last month, and we, you know, I believe that the actual amount of mortgage is bigger than that, because there'll be more than one. 419,000 is there or thereabouts, £230,000 at current exchange rates. You can buy a house for that without a mortgage. We're seeing people buying plots in and around New Zealand for £400,000, £600,000. Yep. So the banking system has got a lot to answer for. They are jumping up and down. They are very, very vocal at the moment about the RBNZ's capital proposals. Yep. Westpac have come out now. They've been jumping and are making big noises about it. ANZ got censored last week about their capital holding. And we've had ASB as well have a little slap on the knuckles. So there is a bit of a war going on between the RBNZ and the banking sector. The RBNZ want people to go to war for them. I'm quite happy to join them, because I think that there is, you know, the risks of building. It's the first-time buyers again. Like we said at the start, they're wanted. They really are needed now to prop all this up. But it's exactly the wrong time for them to be doing so.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you know, the first-time buyers over here in Australia, I've had several approach me in the last week saying, well, you know, should I buy now? Because effectively, suddenly, we've got the coalition back. You know, they've got all these incentives, all these new cheap loans being offered and everything like that. To which I replied, well, you know, just be very careful, because essentially we are still at peak debt. We've still got very high home prices, and the chances are that all of this debt is going to continue to actually be a burden on the economy for some time. So it's not actually necessarily a really good time to buy. And remember that if you take out a loan, you have to repay it. And, you know, that's the thing that perhaps people sometimes forget. And, you know, in the past, perhaps incomes would have grown sufficiently strongly to make it easier later. But with incomes really flat, with cost of living still rising, I think how first-time buyers in particular and households generally must be really, really careful not to be swept away with this enthusiasm for buy now, because, frankly, you can buy now, but you'll be paying later.
Absolutely.
Joe, thank you very much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Pleasure, Martin.
Cheers. So a very interesting comment there from Joe with regard to first-time buyers. And I do think first-time buyers need to be very, very careful at the moment. Don't be allured by all of these wonderful offers. They may not be quite as good as they look. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and we'll see you again next time.